And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 10th, 2019. Today we're joined by educator, author, and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, good. Good to have you with us. So, there is a TV show called Meet the Press, which has been on, I think, since... Probably before there was even TV, for all I know. I mean, it goes back to the early 1950s, Meet the Press, as being... I remember seeing it in black and white, and it was this... It's still very serious, with a very serious Sunday morning talk show where the political talking heads come in and give us our propaganda talking points for the week, right? Week after week after week. It's currently run by a gentleman named Chuck Todd, who is sitting... as a successor in a long line of rather illustrious people who hosted Meet the Press. Well, fine. About two or three weeks ago, the United States government put out the National Climate Assessment, which is a quadrennial review of the status of the threat of climate change to the United States. As a response to that, Chuck Todd had... talking heads on his Sunday morning show to briefly, basically to disparage that report, the National Climate Assessment report. And what he had was a bunch of climate deniers come on and say, well, I don't really know any science, but I don't believe this, right? And Chuck Todd took some heat, at least on Twitter and other places, for not doing the right thing, having a very influential show and not doing the right thing. If you think a few weeks ago, Mariah DR and you and I had a long discussion about the Chris Hayes and
Dave Roberts
about the trusted voices. I mean, how do you know the truth? You get the truth from trusted voices. Well, Meet the Press is kind of the quintessential trusted voice, right? And if they're spewing climate denial, then so anyway, poor Mr. Chuck Todd, I think, felt the heat, and maybe he saw the light. Because Mariah, tell me, what did Chuck Todd and his NBC Meet the Press do this past weekend?
Yeah, so he had basically a whole bunch of people on that said, oh, wow, we really need to do something about climate change, and we need to do it fast, and we need to do it intensely. And it's going to impact us economically. It's going to impact our military. It's going to sink Florida. They just really hammered about the importance of doing something about climate change quickly, and also explored some of the sort of philosophical reasons why we're not doing climate change. And it's noted that that Carlos Curbelo, the Republican from Florida, was on there as well to sort of, and he's very pro climate change, to sort of talk mm-hmm. about some mm-hmm. of the political ramifications and what he's seeing in his own state, and why he's very much on board with how we need to stop covering the debate and start covering the story for climate change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for my money, it was the first, it was a 60 full minutes devoted to climate change, which is already a landmark kind of event, right? It was, he had Governor Jerry Brown, he had Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, talking about things. He had panels of, as you say, it was Kate Marvel and this Representative Curbelo from Florida. And Chuck Todd began the whole thing, the whole episode, by saying that he wasn't going to have an argument about whether or not climate change was real, that it is, and that's how they're going to talk about it. He really put the boo on the idea of having some sort of back and forth about whether or not climate change is real, for which he gets credit, right?
And I think that tagline of we need to stop covering the debate and start covering the story was a really good, something that they repeated frequently, and I think it's a very good point.
Right.
Let's not talk about the debate, because there's no debate. Let's start talking about what needs to happen, why it's happening, what we can do about it.
So I guess I have to say, number one, congratulations to Chuck Todd for listening and reacting. I mean, it was good. But then the critiques start, right? No good deed goes unpunished, as the philosopher said. I mean, they had this, but they did not have on any climate scientists. In particular, a guy named Michael Mann, you know, never got the invite. The guy is well-spoken. He's been through the wars. And they didn't have any activists on, right? They didn't have Bill McKibben. Go ahead.
Right. Absolutely. There were no activists. They did have a climate scientist, a woman. I didn't catch her name.
Kate Marvel, who is a NASA lead project scientist or something. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But they didn't have some of the leading. Well, she's a leading scientist as well. But you're saying they probably should have had more scientists.
Well, and they should have had more activists, right? Where were the Sunrise Movement kids? Where was McKibben, who's not a scientist? So there's that aspect of it. And then for my money, much as it is great to have a one-hour presentation, the thing that I would urge Chuck Todd, if you're listening, Chuck, is that this we need to touch on this every week, that every aspect of our lives will be touched by climate change. And this the Meet the Press show weekly talks about health care, foreign policy, immigration, all these issues, and they need to bring the climate aspect into that discussion, because it's real and it's overpoweringly important to recognize climate as part of all those other discussions and not cordoned off into a 1 hour special where you can pat yourself on the back and say, hey, we did climate change last January. We don't have to talk about it again this year. And it's really, but having said all that, Mariah, would you agree with me that, it was a net win for climate people?
It was. And I also appreciated that he addressed what is the most effective way to talk about climate change. And I thought that was an interesting point, with Kate Marvel saying, I'm a data person, but I realize that data aren't the way to do it. It doesn't actually get people's attention. And people are much more connected to values and things that sort of go for their values. And Chuck Todd went around and asked kind of each person in a different specialty, is it the economics? Is that what'll catch people's attention? Should we talk about it from that lens? Is it defense? Should we talk about it from the military weakness that occurs when you know, we're losing our Newport News is going underwater, and all of our military bases and all of the things that really matter for our military to be strong are being threatened by climate change. Is that the lens we should use? You know, what about the insurance? You know, the former FEMA director was on there, Craig Fugate. And he said, our insurance, you know, we're seeing one of the largest transfers in the last 20 years from private insurance to federal programs. And that's a big deal. And he said we look to the past to prepare for the future, but we've got all of these record-breaking storms and wildfires and droughts happening. So the future is no longer a good model for the past is no longer a good model for the future. So
yeah, well, I remember at the end of the show he did ask the question, is what's going to galvanize action? And that it was at that point that I was standing screaming at the TV, because Chuck Todd has this huge blind spot, right? He is a critical player as a trusted voice to talk about and make people aware of what's happening. And for him to say, to be not recognize the role that he has and the media has in educating people, not about a political solution, but about the facts of the matter, and connected to, you know, values and whatnot. But, I mean, for him to be sitting there saying, oh, yeah, well, maybe the insurance industry will wake us all up, when he's got a weekly bully pulpit in front of millions of American people. I mean, really.
Right. I mean, I think that you sort of hit the nail on the head, where the answer to his question is, how should we talk about climate change? It's that we should talk about it every day. It doesn't matter what you're saying about it. It should be, as we've spoken about in our prior podcast, it should be a drumbeat that the media is hitting every single day, so that incrementally is shifting the paradigm for something that is an important part of our life, instead of a fringe issue.
Right, absolutely. So I felt a little bit of optimism having seen that on TV, but then that leads into an interesting article written by our favorite climate philosopher, a guy named Dave Roberts, who seems to be all over the news lately writing these articles. Last week we talked about Dave Roberts and the Green New Deal explained. He did a very good job of that. This past few days, he's put up an article called "A Case for Climate Optimism." No, what conditional optimism on climate? Right? Did you see that, Mariah?
Yeah, I have to say he is prolific. My goodness, because the articles he's writing regularly are not like two pages, right? I mean, they're
detailed and
yes.
God bless him.
It's quite amazing, but right, yeah. So he sort of opened the article by saying, "Is there hope?" That's the wrong question to ask, and you know, something that sort of struck me in that sort of opening was he was saying that. You can face something with good spirits if you feel part of a community dedicated to common purpose. And again, this kind of goes back to the media needs to be a drumbeat in sort of bringing this up and saying, look, we're all in this together, because that's going to be what keeps us able to work toward solutions for this problem. Mm-hmm. If we feel like we're alone or that no one's listening to us or that, you know, I mean, I think of James Hansen, who in 1980 and Al Gore was saying, look, we need to do something about this. Like, how terrible does that feel when no one is listening to you, you know? And so he's saying that in community, it is a lot easier to work toward these things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it makes it not as hard to go after this. I mean, it's still, he of course in the article goes very deep into how hard it is going to be. And in great detail talks about, you know, that a lot of what we're looking into, a lot of the assessments and all the different ways we're looking at things are all predicated on sort of continuing along with GDP, increasing GDP and
as the figure of merit of the thing that we all want to see happen.
Yeah,
right?
You know, and continued economic growth is an unquestioned premise. And if you have continued economic growth as an unquestioned premise, it's going to be kind of difficult to attack climate change, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he gets into that and I found that interesting. But I don't know.
I think that the case that Roberts makes towards the end of this article, so he goes, he talks a little bit about what does hope mean. He makes the case for being pessimistic, which if you're a, you know, Winnie the Pooh Eeyore type, you can accept the pessimistic case. But then he talks about a case why it's reasonable to be optimistic. And for my money, what he talked about was the adoption of technology. And this is where you're going to love the guy. I mean, he crosses back and forth between being geeky and being explanatory. Most technologies have very small beginnings. You've all heard of the early adopter syndrome, right? There are some people that go out and buy the first electric vehicle because they want to be cool. But most people, myself included, hang back for a long time, right? So if you talk about the adoption curve of a technology, how long it takes to penetrate, what you see is that for a long time, the adoption is quite slow. And there are examples of this with telephones and automobiles and airplanes and trains and computers. I mean, there were computers from the 1950s and things went along very slowly. You know, a few more computers, they would get smaller. And then in the 1980s, all of a sudden, the adoption rate skyrocketed. And if in your mind's eye, if you plot kind of time on the bottom axis and the adoption rate, or the adoption on the vertical axis, you can trace out what he calls an S-curve, right, which is basically the domination of a market for your technology. And it goes along at very low levels, and all of a sudden, boom, the switch goes on, and everyone. So let's talk about a cell phone. Cell phones were, you know, who's the gecko guy in Wall Street, the Greed movie in the 80s, right? He had this huge, walking around Central Park with his huge walkie-talkie-like phone, right? It was a slow adoption. And then in the mid-90s with a smartphone, actually in the early 2000s, all of a sudden everybody had to have a cell phone. Bam, it went from nothing to everyone. It was the default technology. And I think the case that he's making is that renewable energies have many similarities to computers, to cell phones, to automobiles, all that kind of stuff, that they go along slow, but then all of a sudden, breathtakingly, they just become the dominant technology. And that's the hope. That's the conditional hope, is that if we keep pushing this stuff forward, all of it will, in its natural course, be adopted, and then it becomes a snowball effect. As more and more people adopt it, all of a sudden, boom, it becomes the default. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And in the article, he took it a step further and said it's not just that rapid change is not just possible in technology, but it's also possible in politics. He said in both domains there are tipping points after which change accelerates. So I think he's talking about that S. And he said after which change accelerates, rendering the once implausible inevitable. And he goes on to say that we can't really predict those tipping points, and relying on them can seem like hoping for miracles. But he says our history is replete with miraculously rapid changes. They have happened, they can happen again, and the more we envision them and work toward them, the more likely they become. And then he says, what other choice is there?
So, well, there you go. I think that's a good way to leave it. If you want to be a little bit cheered, and you want to learn something, and you want to meet a pretty good writer, maybe we need to have him on the show someday here.
That'd be great.
Read this article by Dave Roberts. It's in Vox, Vox the Explainer website, about conditional optimism. So what we'll do is we'll put up a link to that in the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find that link on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to our show on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of those podcast applications, right? So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon, or at least build a program that matches the scale of the climate challenge. So thanks so much.
I like the editing on the fly. It's good. That's great.
Thanks so much for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you all again next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.